From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo may be backing away from support of the Common Core National Education Standards. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on a New York Times editorial on the Moreland Commission, and fair election supporters call for public funding of elections. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Is Governor Cuomo backing away from his support for the new Common Core curriculum in schools? Well, as the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, Cuomo seems to have cooled from his initial endorsement of the rapid transition to the adoption of the National Education Standards.
Everywhere Governor Cuomo goes these days, he's dogged by questions from reporters about what's widely perceived as a rocky startup of New York State's adoption of the new National Common Core Standards for school children.
Can you talk about the Common Core?
Cuomo was asked essentially the same question in recent days in stops from Buffalo to Lake Placid.
A lot of people have issues with it.
In his answers lately, Governor Cuomo's been distancing himself from the growing discontent that's led to raucous meetings between state education officials and angry parents and teachers. At an event on Staten Island, Cuomo called the implementation of the Common Core standards problematic. In Lake Placid, he acknowledged the unease.
It's been very controversial. It's very controversial here in the state.
Just a month ago, Cuomo sounded much more supportive of the Common Core implementation, saying change can be hard even when it's right.
When you come in with a big change, there's normally fits and starts, and it's a little jerky. So that's to be expected also. But Common Core curriculum, nationwide, that's where the country's going, right? That's the state of the art.
Cuomo made those comments on October 23rd, just a few days after a raucous meeting in Poughkeepsie, where parents and teachers complained to State Education Commissioner John King, saying their children are taking too many tests and teachers are not given adequate preparation to teach the new curriculum. At one point, King was shouted down. Since then, the controversy has only grown. It's been the subject of two legislative hearings, and at a recent forum on Long Island, things were not much calmer. In New York State, the governor does not have direct control over education. Cuomo has no power to appoint the education commissioner. King was chosen by the State Board of Regents. The regents members are picked by the legislature. The governor is quick to point that out.
The governor is not in charge of the state education department. Most people think the governor is in charge. It's called the state education department. The governor is in charge of the state. That's true, but I'm not in charge of all aspects. And one of the main areas is this state education department.
A recent Siena poll shows New Yorkers have become disenchanted with the Common Core. Nearly half hold doubts about its effectiveness. Steve Greenberg, a spokesman for Siena poll, says voters, though, may not make the distinction of who has authority over the education department, and Cuomo will likely be held accountable whether he's actually in charge of it or not.
Education is a key issue, and I think what this poll says is that all of those involved in education have to do a better job of informing the New York voters and the New York citizens of what their efforts are, what their purpose is, and how they're going about doing it.
While the governor can't directly affect education policy, he and the legislature can pass a bill to slow down the implementation of the Common Core standards. Many groups, including teachers' unions, have been calling for a moratorium. And at each stop the governor has made in recent days, he's hinted that he might just try to do that.
Legislatively, the state could pass a law that stops it, starts it, accelerates it, etc.
The governor says he's going to be keeping an eye on the situation. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. The political news just comes flying at you from all directions, Alan. Let's start with Governor Cuomo this week, who had some harsh words for state lawmakers who are fighting his commission in court, that's the Moreland Act Commission, over subpoenas that would force legislators to reveal their outside business with legal clients. And he says, what are they afraid of? Those that have nothing to hide, disclose.
Well, he's absolutely right. That's the first thing. And secondly, I have to tell you, about half of them have accepted the subpoenas and have complied, the people that the Moreland Act Commission sent to. Those are obviously the ones who have little or nothing to hide. And he's right. I mean, there's no two ways about it. This is exactly why the Attorney General Eric Schneiderman deputized all of the Moreland Act guys so that they could ask the legislative branch. Otherwise, Moreland Acts can't go to the legislative branch for this material. I wrote a column anybody wants to see it could go to legislativegazette.com. But I have to tell you, there is no question that what we have in New York State is a system of legal bribery. Hey, is there anybody out there who thinks that 9/10 of the lobbyists who are giving money one way or the other to these guys aren't trying to buy something from them? Now, it's illegal to say, if you do this, then I'll give you the money. That would put you in jail. But believe me, there's a system of the way it works around here. You give money in the campaign. You don't have to ask for anything. Everybody knows what you want. That's what this is all about. I think the Cuomo people saw the danger in what was exposed by Lovett, and the Moreland Act people went ahead with their subpoenas and did what they had to do. Nevertheless, what you come down to here is Cuomo saying that the legislature is wrong in trying to stop the Moreland Act commissioners. And by saying that, he makes the very good point that what have you got to hide? Exactly.
The New York Times, meanwhile, editorialized on Saturday about the Moreland Commission coming forward with the idea that if you're going to accomplish anything, do public financing of campaigns.
Well, you know, everybody's for public financing of campaigns. There is a crucial question. I mean, the theory is that if everybody puts a little in, they won't go to the big guys and rely on them. However, those of us who know some of these people know they'll take what the state gives them in matches, and then they'll go to the big guys, too. So I'm not so sure that it will be the panacea which everybody expects it to. Of course, you know, you have a very cynical public out there, and many of them are saying, hey, look, we know these guys are doing this pay-to-play stuff. They'll always do it. So now they want taxpayers' money to run their campaigns with also. The Times is right. Of course, we should have it. But we should also really be installing all kinds of safeguards and all kinds of daylight into the system so that instead of knowing that a legislator got between this amount and that amount, which is what they put in the last bill, we know exactly what they got. Somebody gives you money. Write it down. Otherwise, don't run for the legislature.
Finally, we've been hearing the name Rob Astorino out of Westchester County as a potential candidate to face Governor Cuomo in the next gubernatorial election. And now we're hearing of a meeting between New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and Astorino. Does it mean anything?
Well, Chris Christie allegedly has said, it appeared in print, said that he was all for Astorino. He was going to help him. Now, Christie is now the head of the National Governors Conference. It's his job to get governors elected. He comes in and he shoots off his mouth to Astorino. People hear it. And it was a ringing endorsement of Astorino. But, you know, one of the things about these guys are that they know, they look at the polls. Here's what happens. Hillary Clinton thinks somebody's going to win. She endorses him. Christie thinks somebody's going to win. He endorses her. And then he takes the credit later on. The polls show it. But right now, Cuomo is crushing Astorino, who is what we call a who, W-H-O hyphen he, question mark, who he, and nobody knows who he is. However, I want to point out that Cuomo's father, Mario, faced a who he for his fourth term, and the who he won. And his name was Pataki. Nobody knew who the guy was. So what do we have? We have a question that I've been looking at for a while in terms of the reelection of Cuomo. If, in fact, he's a new governor, he'll get a second term. No two ways about it. But if people confuse him with his father, which is, after all, the way he got elected, you know, he had the Cuomo name. If they confuse him with his father, then would it be Cuomo's second term or would it be his fifth term?
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
¶¶
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Fair election supporters held a recent conference call to push for New York State campaign finance reform and public funding of elections. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was on the call and filed this report.
A coalition of citizen activist groups, including Citizen Action and the Working Families Party, used the call as a platform to state their case for establishing a public financing system for New York state elections. On their side, State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, a Democrat and former longtime assemblyman.
The reality is too many of our best and brightest potential candidates feel closed out with this kind of a system. They don't even choose to participate in the electoral system. And they are essentially locked out because the current system rewards the deep pockets and excludes those with more modest means who might otherwise make a great difference if they would choose to run for office. Having gone through a statewide election myself as someone who is not a self-funder, my opponent was able to spend twice as much as I was able to. It still worked out for me, but more often than not, it's the candidate with the larger campaign purse that does prevail just because of the influence of money. Too often, certainly, we know our recent history in New York.
DiNapoli added that fair elections is fair game for the Moreland Commission, formed by Governor Andrew Cuomo and Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, to uncover corruption among public officials.
Certainly, this should be a solution that Moreland could recommend as we head to the start of a new legislative session.
DiNapoli conceded that rolling out a statewide public financing system would be costly.
I've seen the reliable studies that have indicated that the annualized cost of having the kinds of elections to be public financed as we're talking about would be anywhere between $26 and $41 million. Again, depending on how many people would choose to participate and how many offices would be included in that. So to me, in the context of a multi-billion dollar budget, spending $20 or $30 million, even $40 million, that's really a very, very small investment with a tremendous payback.
New York City Comptroller-elect Scott Stringer was also on the call. He attributed his successful campaign, including a tight primary against former Governor Eliot Spitzer, to the Big Apple's small donor matching system.
The campaign finance program, after I was successful in the Democratic primary, I was running against a candidate who didn't really have the ability to raise any money, and I was still eligible for campaign matching funds. And I just want to tell everybody that we're returning that money back to the system because we didn't need it. And we can actually create a system where candidates can buy in very competitive elections using public money. But when you don't need that money, you give it back so that someone else can use it, other candidates can use it. This is a system that should be the model for the country. But in order for this to be the model of a country, we also have to recognize that we've got to pass it in New York State. If we pass it in New York State, we will pass it around the country and change politics for the better.
Stringer says his defeat of Spitzer exemplifies why public financing works. Advocates would like to see the system in place in time for the 2014 elections. Susan Lerner is executive director of Common Cause New York.
Properly calibrated public financing of elections encourages good people with real community backing to run. It makes a difference.
Lerner and fellow call organizers are hopeful that a grassroots groundswell of support will propel public financing through Albany, transitioning the capital city into a new Albany, where elections will be more competitive and candidates more accountable. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The chair of the New York State Public Service Commission is responding to calls for the PSC to become more publicly involved in the early stages of plans for transmission line projects. This comes after two state legislators in the Hudson Valley penned letters of concern to the PSC. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
It all relates to Governor Andrew Cuomo's Energy Highway Blueprint to look at plans and alternatives to ease transmission congestion to meet downstate power needs. The Public Service Commission is in the initial scoping phase of reviewing plans by developers to upgrade transmission lines to ease the bottleneck on the transmission system between Utica and New York City to add some 1,000 megawatts of transmission capacity. Energy companies are filing introductory scoping statements and initiating public outreach in communities where projects could be sited. State Senator Terry Gibson represents a portion of Dutchess County that could be affected, including the towns of Clinton, Hyde Park, Milan, and Pleasant Valley. And while he has concerns about the proposals themselves, The Democrat is also concerned about educating the public now that developers have begun holding community meetings.
All of the various people that want to participate in this process are being asked to come make presentations to the local communities about what they plan to do to upgrade the power lines. And it is causing an enormous amount of stress and concern on the part of our local communities and our local elected officials, because they were given no warning about this. They were given no heads up about this and were given no education on what to expect, and still are very confused about what to expect.
He has written to the PSC asking for a closer look into various aspects of the proposals. In addition,
we want the representatives from the PSC and from the governor's office to meet with the residents and attend some of these meetings as well, since this was an initiative that came down from the governor.
Audrey Zibelman is chair of the PSC.
Yes, it's our intention to have someone from the commission to attend each meeting that's held.
From my understanding, there hasn't been. Is that true?
That historically there wasn't, but I think that given the fact that, one, the importance of this proceeding, the opportunity it presents, but obviously the challenges that is stayed with any time you're building in transmission. We think it's really important that we're there, and that we're helping make certain that we understand the questions and concerns and have an opportunity to address them.
Hypothetically, if there is a meeting in 3 weeks in Clinton, for example, or Hyde Park, those are some of the towns that could potentially be affected, would someone from the PSC go to one of those outreach meetings?
Yes. Our intention is to not only go, but also be part of the arrangement of those meetings, so that we make sure that they're informative and effective in getting people to both understand what we're doing and getting input back.
A spokesman for the governor says his office has not yet reviewed Gibson's letter. Democratic Assemblymember Dee Dee Barrett also wrote to the PSC with concerns about proposed transmission line projects from New York Transco and other energy companies.
Many of the economic engines in this area are the farms, the natural beauty, the small businesses, the small villages, these communities that we're trying to attract young people to. And, if these things will adversely affect that, then we're completely undermining the economy of this area.
She says each proposal would impact significant portions of her 106th Assembly District, covering parts of Columbia and Dutchess counties. Both she and Gibson are concerned about high voltage lines running overhead and want the PSC and developers to consider burying lines underground. Here's Transco spokesman John Masergian.
If the Public Service Commission wants to move in that direction towards underground lines, it's absolutely something that we would consider. I would warn, though, that underground lines are much more costly than overhead lines, and in the range of 5 to 10 times more costly than installing overhead facilities.
The PSC's Zibelman says the commission will consider the possibility of burying lines underground. New York Transco is a partnership of New York's transmission owners and includes Central Hudson, Con Edison, Orange and Rockland, the Long Island Power Authority, the New York Power Authority, NYSEG, and National Grid. The public comment period for this early phase ends December 20th, though Zibelman notes that until the commission makes any decisions, comments will be accepted.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State will invest up to $35 million over the next 5 years to bring together two North Country institutions, the goal to spur commercialization of biotech products. We get the latest from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
Economic development announcements made this week by Governor Andrew Cuomo include more than $30 million to facilitate a partnership between the Trudeau Institute in Saranac Lake and Clarkson University in Potsdam.
We were in danger of losing Trudeau. Trudeau was going to close down, pack up, and move on. And we took the Trudeau closing as an opportunity to find a different relationship and a different business model. Our plan is to put Clarkson together with Trudeau. Trudeau, master of basic medical research, infectious disease research. Clarkson, master of the high tech and engineering research. Bring those two institutions together. The state will invest $20 million over 3 years, total investment $35 million over 3 years. and we believe we will create hundreds of jobs in this new institution.
The Trudeau Institute is an internationally renowned biomedical research center. Clarkson University is a nationally ranked private college in engineering, science, and business studies. The state is investing in the two because of the potential to, quote, dramatically energize the research to commercialization, unquote, of biotech products. The funds will be used for operational costs and lab improvements at Trudeau and Clarkson and implementation of programs. Trudeau Institute President, Director, and CEO Ronald Goldfarb says the funds also provide the impetus for faculty at each campus to work together on new projects.
We represent unique and highly complementary areas. This true synergy between what we're going to do will completely revolutionize biomedical research in the North Country.
Goldfarb notes that Trudeau and Clarkson are complementary institutions with different disciplines and areas of expertise.
This is a particularly good fit because of the synergies. It's rather remarkable, actually. The beauty of this is that it adds an extra dimension to each party. Not only do we have synergy of the basic science approaches, but how we can commercialize things and extend it to the clinic as well is truly unique. I think that this puts us in a position that's enviable, and I do not think we could have found a better partner.
Clarkson University President Tony Collins says melding their expertise in engineering and the sciences with Trudeau's biomedical research creates a new synergy in nanoscience development.
When you start to think about how to deliver the drugs, how do you encapsulate them, how do you get them to move through the body, that's actually small nano delivery systems. And so now we recognize that we can meld not only our faculties together, but also one of the other strengths that Clarkson brings is the capacity to commercialize. On our campus in the last 3 or 4 years, we've grown about 60 companies. We understand how to drive the products of fundamental research and development into the commercial space, how to translate that research. So when you put all of that together, this is not just unique to the North Country, not unique to New York State, not unique to the nation. It is a collaboration that lots of people around the world have been trying to work out how to get it together, and a little crisis actually made us see what a tremendous opportunity is.
New York 45th District State Senator Betty Little, a Republican, had been concerned about the future of the Trudeau Institute in the Adirondacks because it was being recruited for an out-of-state move. But she says the state's seed money creating the new partnership will now lead to a biotech cluster in the North Country.
It won't be just Trudeau and Clarkson. We're going to have a biotech center. And that's something that we have been working for in Saranac Lake. And we have three companies who are already there. So we're looking and hoping for much more from this.
The formal agreement between the Trudeau Institute, Clarkson University, and Empire State Development was signed in Lake Placid.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number again, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1348. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustin.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.